From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast to Coast AM. First of all, as we wrap up the Memorial Weekend, I trust you took a few moments to reflect, not too late to do it now, and think about our men and women, past and present, of the armed forces. Special hello to Thomas and Laura Hale of Louisville, Illinois. They listen all the time, and later tonight, the story of Bob Crane from Hogan's Hero. It's called Crane. Looking forward to that. I loved that show when I was a kid. Here's what's happening. At least six flights were impacted by threats at airports in New York, New Jersey, and Boston, according to airlines and law enforcement. This is apparently what happened. An Air France plane was escorted by U.S. fighter jets to JFK Airport in New York City after an anonymous threat was made against the flight. The FBI said the plane has since been checked and cleared. No incidents there. Two flights to Newark, New Jersey, also affected. A Delta Airlines flight from London and a United Airlines flight from Madrid. Also Logan in Boston. A threat turned up negative for a Delta flight from Paris to Logan. Strange things happening. 1 month after the Baltimore riots, less visible violence still engulfs the city. It is now seen over the Memorial Day weekend, 26 shootings, nine of which were fatal. The newest fatalities raised the number of fatalities in May to 35. In Marblehead, Massachusetts, and this is going to happen a lot, a drone flying above a Memorial Day parade crowd lost control, crashed into a building, then landed on a man's head. He's okay, but a few minutes before that, he was holding his little one-year-old daughter with him. That could have been a mess. The Russian military has launched a massive exercise involving 250 aircraft and other weapons. What are they up to? 12,000 servicemen participating in that drill. Now, when you go to your computer, have you opened it up lately and you've seen something flash up that says, you know, you may have been infected? There's a massive industry of fake Windows support or Windows repair services, and many of them operate from India. Let's check in with the expert, Lauren Weinstein, on this one. Lauren, what's this all mean?
Yeah, this is something really nasty. It's been going on for quite a while, but there's been a pretty significant uptick in it recently, and people are getting scammed by this left and right, including people who, you know, are very intelligent and they understand what they're doing on their systems. But some of these scams are just so well laid out. There's different ways these can happen. They can happen like you were just saying. You could turn on your computer. You could be visiting a website. You might not get the site you thought. Maybe you typed in the wrong address. Maybe you clicked the wrong link. And suddenly you have a big, ugly warning on your, on your screen that says, your system is infected.
And you can't get it off the
screen. You can't. Sometimes you can click away. Often they've got it kind of locked up. They've got the browser locked up. If you've been unfortunate enough to get one of these through a phishing email or something, then you might actually have a virus in there that makes it even worse. But the key thing is they all want you, you know, in general, to call a phone number, usually an 800 number, an 888 number, something like that. And they say, we'll fix you up. You've got to call this immediately. You end up, I should mention, you know, before we get to that part, the other way these happen is cold calls. You can just be sitting in your living room watching TV. The phone rings, you pick it up, and someone will say they're calling from the computer support center, and your computer has notified them. They've got a warning that there's something wrong with your computer. It's been infected, and they want to help. They can claim they're with Microsoft, whatever. They're not. And you know, most people they call, you know, you're not even sitting at the computer. The computer may not be on. You may not have a computer, but enough will. Enough will have the computers, and they'll go, oh, my God, this is bad news. Once they've got you hooked that way, whether you call them or they call you, what will usually happen at that point is they'll say, look, you've got a serious problem. We want to help you with this. They'll be very polite. They do often sound like they're in India, because they are. They'll say sir, they'll say ma'am, they'll sound very official. They'll ask you to go to Google, for example, and they'll ask you to look up a particular kind of software, some kind of sharing software. Sometimes it's TeamViewer, sometimes it's other things. And they will ask you to install that on your computer so that they can look into your computer and see what's wrong. And once you've done that, they own you. They can do pretty much anything. They'll show you fake error messages. They'll show you fake warnings. They can start deleting your files and say, look, you're missing files.
Jeez.
And, of course, then they'll say, we can fix this, but we need your credit card.
Is that what they're after? They're after the money for this phony scam, or are they trying to hack into you, too?
It's a multiple-layered thing. The first thing they'll do always is try to get a payment method. In other words, they want a credit card. And they'll have fake pages that look like official PayPal pages. They'll have all kinds of things like that. Once they get your credit card number, they'll say, this will cost $50, it'll cost $200, whatever. They'll charge you for that, and who knows what else.
Jeez,
going forward.
That's amazing.
Once they've got it.
You know, producer Tom Danheiser had this happen to him, and he wanted to borrow my credit card to pay it, so he was scamming the scammer. Unbelievable.
Yes.
But Lauren,
well, I should say there are people who have a hobby of when they get calls like this, they record them and they string the guys along. And there are some hilarious recordings you can find on the net where at the very end the scammer just completely goes crazy realizing that they've wasted 2 hours of their time.
Find some of those for us. I'd love to play some of them if we could.
Oh yeah, I have a whole collection of them. But anyway, just the final word here is anytime you see one of those messages, anytime you see something that says call an 800 number, or someone calls you and says they want to repair your computer, no matter who they claim they're with, it's a fraud. Don't do it. Go to a legitimate computer repair place or someone you know that you can trust to work on your computer.
You got it. Thanks, Lord. Great information. A storm system dropping records amount of rainfall across the southern plains. Too bad you can't get it in the West Coast, causing flash floods in normally dry riverbeds, tornadoes destroying homes, forcing at least 2,000 people to flee. Some kids were lifted up in a house. Two people confirmed dead in Oklahoma. In Texas, a man's body recovered from a flooded area. A firefighter died in Oklahoma trying to save a woman. In Texas, of course, in Austin, 8 people reported missing, including 3 children, a total of 12 people in that region. Mother Nature angry today. At least 13 people have been killed by a tornado that hit a northern Mexico border city. And in India, 500 people reported to have died already in a heat wave sweeping India. Temperatures 118 degrees. Many of those homes just don't have air conditioning. They also say more than a quarter of middle-aged person's skin, 25% of their skin, may have already made the first steps towards cancer, according to a study. These are samples taken from 55 to 73-year-olds, and they found 100 DNA mutations linked to cancer just in a little piece of skin. Lovers of olive oil could face the prospect of supplies of their favorite cooking oil being rationed, according to experts. For poor harvests in Spain and Italy have fueled warnings from olive oil industry experts of a massive shortfall in supplies reaching the marketplace. A 65-year-old German grandmother gave birth to quadruplets at a Berlin hospital this week. The 3 boys and a girl born prematurely at 26 weeks are being taken care of. They're in good health, and they have a good chance, they say, of survival. 65-year-old woman. Giving birth to 4 kids, birth to 4 kids. President Barack Obama heralded the first U.S. Memorial Day in 14 years without a major ground war in an annual ceremony of remembrance on Monday for fallen American forces. That's what he says. I'm not sure. I think we're still got some forces out there. And remarks at Arlington National Cemetery near Washington. The president paid tribute to the U.S. military personnel who served in conflicts such as World War II, as well as the more recent wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, of course, don't forget the Korean War and Vietnam as well. And, of course, we must have Danyon Brinkley on for his remarks on Veterans Day and on Memorial Day. And, Danyon, my friend, thank you for serving.
Thank you, George. It was really great. We did Las Vegas, and then yesterday, today, we did the LAVA, and we had the Buffalo Soldier Motorcycle Group. We had a Christian motorcycle group, and we had probably 25, and I'll bet you we had 200 Twilight Brigaders spread out across America.
Good for you.
The VA seems to be changing a little, George. I think that this story, I've been looking at this story, that they estimate that 22 are committing suicide each day.
Ugh.
if you take a good look at that, that is a random sampling. I'll bet you it's closer to 50 a day. And as I look at this and to see the kind of people who turned out up in your area, the Valhalla Cemetery, the Dignity Valhalla Cemetery, mm-hmm. had about 1,000 people come out to celebrate and to spend time and to meet with veterans and to honor it. So today was a really good day in remembrance, and I'm really glad that this is the 90th year that the Dignity a cemetery in North Hollywood has had this celebration. They've been doing it for 90 years. So I'd have to say that today was a really good day in the Twilight Brigade, and watching these guys, we delivered gifts around everybody, you know how we always do, and watching the surprise of seeing 40 people come to visit you and to go to rounds and to make rounds is really important. Everybody has to stop and realize these guys have nobody, George. It's great to honor those who have passed. And, you know, a lot of us wonder why we made it and they didn't. But there's guys that are there by themselves. And to see these people show up on this day, that kind of joy and that kind of look in their eye makes it all worth it.
Well, you, my friend, you're one of a kind as well. Danyon's website, thetwilightbrigade.com. I want to dedicate this program to everybody who has served, past and present, in our military. My father was a World War II veteran, passed away, as you know, at the age of 88. I want to dedicate this to him and so many others, this great poem by Lawrence Vaincourt, A Soldier Died Today. He was getting old and punchy, and his hair was falling fast, and he sat around the Legion telling stories of the past, of a war that he had fought in and the deeds that he had done and his exploits with his buddies. They were heroes, everyone, and though sometimes to his neighbors his tales became a joke, all his buddies listened, for they knew whereof he spoke. But we'll hear his tales no longer, for old Bob has passed away, and the world's a little poor, for a soldier died today. And now he won't be mourned by many, just his children and his wife, for he lived an ordinary, very quiet sort of life. He held a job, he raised a family, quietly going on his way, and the world won't note his passing, though a soldier died today. You know, when politicians leave this earth, their bodies lie in state, while thousands note their passing and proclaim that they were great. Papers tell of their life stories from the time that they were young. But the passing of a soldier, it goes unnoticed and unsung. The politician's stipend and the style in which he lives are sometimes disproportionate to the services that he gives. While the ordinary soldier who offered up his all is paid off with a medal, and perhaps a pension, small, so it's easy to forget them, for it was so long ago that our Bobs and Jims and Johnnies and Jessicas went to battle, but we know. It was not the politicians with their compromise employees who won for us the freedom that our country now enjoys. Now, should you find yourself in danger with your enemies at hand, would you really want some cop-out with his ever-waffling stand? Or would you want a soldier who has sworn to defend his home, his kin, his country, and fight until the end? It was just a common soldier, and his ranks are growing thin, but his presence should remind us that we may need his like again. When his countries are in conflict, then we find the soldier's part is to clean up all the troubles that the politicians start. If we cannot do him honor while he's here to hear the praise, then at least let's give him homage at the ending of his days. Perhaps just a simple headline in the paper that might say, "Our country is in mourning, for a soldier died today." And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Sad story over this Memorial Day weekend. Mathematician John Nash, who inspired the Oscar-winning film A Beautiful Mind, has died in a car crash along with his wife. Nash, 86 years old, his wife Alicia, 82, were killed when their taxi crashed in New Jersey. Apparently the taxi driver was trying to pass another car. He hit the abutment, and what we've heard, that Nash and his wife were tossed out of the taxi. They died on the scene. The mathematician is renowned for his work in game theory, winning the Nobel Prize for Economics in 1994. His breakthroughs in math and his struggles with schizophrenia were the focus of the 2001 film. Russell Crowe, who played him, tweeted, "Stunned. My heart goes out to John and Alicia and family. An amazing partnership. Beautiful minds, beautiful hearts." Now, John Nash, who had schizophrenia, seemed to be against medication. And we're bringing in tonight for 2 hours pharmacist Ben Fuchs to talk about this and some other issues. He is, of course, part of the CriticalHealthNews.com team. And Ben, just a very sad story to hear this. I was out of town this weekend, and the story broke. John Nash was one of a kind, Ben.
That was very sad. 86 years old, you get in a taxi, and then
and you're dead.
An accident. Tragic yeah. story. And he was a beautiful mind and a brilliant mind. A lot of schizophrenics are like that. You know, there's a very interesting connection between creativity and schizophrenia. I used to work in mental institutions as a staff pharmacist, and I worked with a lot of schizophrenics. And I'll tell you what, George, not only was John Nash 100% correct, the medications are absolutely horrible, and they really don't do much for treating psychotic disorders, but it turns out that schizophrenia is kind of a really fascinating disease. It's not even really a disease, it's more like a syndrome. There's no markers for schizophrenia. It's kind of a observational diagnosis that's made based on various factors that are associated with loose and delusional thinking. But it's kind of a fascinating and interesting disease, as you would expect, considering that the brain is the most complicated structure in the universe, and to try to medicate schizophrenia away is really kind of crazy.
You've been a registered pharmacist. You went into the field, of course, to help people. As you look at it now, Ben, did you make a mistake going into that field?
No, I'm really glad I understand pharmacy, because it makes me a real credible advocate for using alternative strategies for healing the body, not just healing the brain, but healing the entire body. I mean, think about it. Who knows better about the toxicity of medication than a pharmacist?
Well, that's true.
Not even a physician.
That is true.
Now, we study in pharmacy school, we study the toxic nature of medication. That's what we spend a great deal of time studying in pharmacy school. And who would you trust more to tell you about the toxic nature of medication than a pharmacist?
I am baffled and fascinated by the pharmaceutical industry. How can a pill, Ben, affect people for whatever it is, whether it's supposed to reduce cholesterol, lower blood pressure, help you with your glucose levels? How can a simple pill affect the body like that? How does it target it?
I'm right with you, George. In fact, that was why I really got into pharmacy in the first place. I was fascinated by how drugs work. Exactly that question that you just asked was the question that I wanted to have answered. How can 100 milligrams, 200 milligrams, the size of the weight of a couple of grains of salt have this kind of global and dramatic effect on the entire biological system? And what it points to is the holographic nature of the body, the entangled nature of every single component. It's all one thing. It's a field. And this is why drugs work the way they do. This is why nutrition works the way it does. I mean, same thing with vitamin C or vitamin B12 or niacin. You know, you take a little bit of these nutrients, and every single one of the 100 trillion different cells in the body is somehow affected, is somehow sustained. And what it points to is the unified nature of the entire body that belies the reductionistic way that modern medicine tries to isolate different components and different structures and different biochemical processes. It can't be done that way, and nothing underscores the failure of the modern medical model more clearly than the fact that the entire body is one holographic system, and you cannot divorce organs and structures and processes and biochemical breakdowns from each other and try to treat them individually.
June is Alzheimer's and Dementia Awareness Month. We're going to talk with pharmacist Ben about that when we come back. Next hour, we will take your phone calls for the entire hour with him about any question you have that relates to your own special health. He's part of the CriticalHealthNews.com team, which we endorse. His toll-free number is 1-855-949-RADIO. Well, we're back with pharmacist Ben Fuchs from CriticalHealthNews.com. Ben, June is Alzheimer's and Dementia Awareness Month. Now, I want you to explain what these afflictions are and about so many young people who listen to our program who simply may be saying, Ah, that's for old people. What do you say?
Well, Alzheimer's disease is a progressive type disorder. It's a degenerative disorder. And you know what, George? These days, they're actually referring to Alzheimer's disease as type 3 diabetes, or as a manifestation
really?
Of type 3 diabetes. And that highlights the idea that controlling your blood sugar is the one of the most important things you could do for overall health, not just the health of the brain, but the health of the entire body. By the way, that includes schizophrenia. They actually used to use something called insulin therapy to treat schizophrenia in order to help stabilize blood sugar. So controlling the blood sugar seems to be one of the most important things you could do to control all of the manifestations of the disease process, almost to the point now where they're calling a seemingly unrelated disease state like Alzheimer's disease type 3 diabetes, which is to say that if you want to do one thing to prevent Alzheimer's disease, to prevent any degenerative disease, to lose weight, to drop your blood pressure, to drop your cholesterol like a stone, to reduce the likelihood of psychotic issues like schizophrenia and autism, it would be to get your blood sugar under control. And you know what, George? In the last 200 years, we have figured out almost systematically how to extract the sweet stuff out of all of our foods and jack up the things that we eat with sugar.
Yep. Which is not good.
Not a good thing at all. And at the same time, we've removed the nutrients that the body uses to process the sugar. So it's like a 1-2 punch. We've jacked up the sugar content of foods. You know, 200 years ago, it was a rare luxury to have a sweet food, just 200-300 years ago. Today, everything is spiked with sugar. So we've got this 1-2 punch of spiking our foods with sugar and then depleting our body, again, almost systematically, of the B vitamins, of electrolytes, of omega fatty acids, of the amino acids, of protein, of all of the foods and all of the micronutrients that are not only responsible for helping us process sugar, but also the nutrients that would satisfy us so that we won't want the sugar.
Ben, if you start a program when you're in your 20s, can you prevent getting Alzheimer's and dementia later on in life?
Absolutely, 100%, especially if you consider that Alzheimer's disease is now being called type 3 diabetes.
Yeah.
Diabetes is like Alzheimer's disease, and like all degenerative issues, is a progressive problem. It gets worse. It starts off when we're young, and then over the course of our chronological age, it gets worse and worse and worse. So by starting off as young as you can, in utero, ideally, when a mother is building a baby in the womb, but certainly when we're young, when we're children, and then when we're teenagers, and then as we go into adolescence and adulthood, making sure that you're keeping your blood sugar as stable as possible by laying off the insulin-spiking foods or the blood sugar-spiking foods, the desserts and the pastas and the soda pop. And just as importantly, George, because, you know, it's one thing to say to lay off the sugar, but it's not necessarily easy to do. So just as importantly, eating satisfying foods and making sure you're getting the micronutrients, the vitamins and the minerals that can have a satisfying or a satiety-inducing effect. So weaning yourself off the sugar and simultaneously making sure you're getting the satisfying nutrients, the satisfaction-inducing nutrients, and the nutrients that help you process the sugar is probably, I don't know if it's the single most, but it's right up there with one of the most important things you could do to prevent the onset of these progressive degenerative diseases.
What are some of the earliest ages you have found where people have this?
Well, you know, people can have memory problems, and they won't necessarily know it's Alzheimer's dementia or some other kind of dementia. They could just be forgetful. You know, one of the signs of something as simple as niacin deficiency. Niacin is involved in helping the body stabilize sugar. It's also very important for brain health. Dr. Abram Hoffer used niacin to literally treat and cure schizophrenia back in the 1950s. Something as simple as niacin deficiency can cause memory problems. And you may just think you keep forgetting where you left your keys, or you keep forgetting where you left your wallet, but it could be the onset of a progressive dementia that may be related to something as simple as a B vitamin deficiency.
Is it true that most pharmaceuticals are synthetic derivatives from natural things?
Mimics. Some are derivatives, but they either are derived from or they mimic some kind of chemical that's found in nature for the most part. Yes, that is indeed true, which tells you something. You know, herbs and plants can be very powerful medicines. And vegetation and vegetables can be very powerful medicines. In fact, food can be very powerful medicines. Not as potent, perhaps, as a pharmacological agent that comes from these from food substances, but certainly you can have medicinal-like effects.
Well, this is a little surreal here, but how is it possible that an herb, a plant, can cure a disease that a human might come down with? It's almost as if it was created on purpose.
We grew up together, George. the marijuana plant contains something called endocannabinoids. Endocannabinoids are duplicates of brain chemicals called, contains cannabinoids, which are duplicates of brain chemicals called endocannabinoids. So the plant itself manufactures neurotransmitters that are found in your brain. We know that plants make birth control pills. They make phytoestrogens. They make the same or very similar molecules that have hormonal effects inside the body. Why would all this happen, George? Well, we grew up together with plants. We evolved together with the plants. So it kind of makes sense that the plants would provide us with what we need. And likewise, when animal bodies die, they go into the ground and they become food for the plants. So it's the cycle of life.
It is amazing. It is amazing how that works, isn't it?
It's a beautiful thing. And it points back to the holistic nature of everything. It's all connected, and that's why you can't take out the gallbladder and expect to get better. That's why you can't target the brain with psychopharmacology and expect to get better. That's why you can't use anti-immune medicines and not expect to have side effects. You know, when we talk about drugs and we talk about side effects are the manifestation of how everything in the body is connected. We talk about pollution. You know, we dump our water, our waste in the ocean as if it's gone after that, right? We don't think that the ocean is somehow connected to us. We don't think that the earth is, that we're on the earth. But when you come right down to it, George, we can't get off the earth unless we have some kind of artificial contraption. We're literally stuck onto the earth as if we were an appendage of the earth. The connectedness of everything is so self-evident that we have to be in a hypnotic trance not to notice it.
We're with pharmacist Ben Fuchs. Ben, if you had to tackle one major issue, what would that be health-wise that you would just wave your magic wand over and fix?
I would say it would be digestion and the microbiome, the good bacteria that live in the intestine. I would have a magic wand that would reestablish every human being's gut bacteria. Now, in lieu of that, I would recommend that people ate lots of fermented foods and make sure they get their probiotic supplements and make sure they were getting good fiber, which acts as a food or a substrate for the good bacteria. But if I had a magic wand, George, I would reestablish everyone's gut bacteria. The trillions and trillions of bacterial entities that make vitamins and detoxify cancer-causing substances and break down fats and help us digest our food and communicate with our intestines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So many people seem to be coming down with all kinds of afflictions, Ben, all kinds. I mean, it's just in record numbers. What's wrong?
Well, you know, that's very interesting. I was just reading a book this weekend called Pandora's Seed, where the author, his name escapes me now, but he hypothesized that when people live together in large numbers, when people live in civilizations where people live together in large quantities in close quarters, disease progresses. And this is, he traces this all the way back
Spencer
to the
Wells,
agriculture.
That's his name. Spencer Wells.
Spencer Wells, right. He traces this back to the advent of agriculture. He said when there were hunter-gatherers, we didn't really have large populations, and as it turns out, our hunter-gatherer ancestors actually in many ways had better health markers than we did. And what he says is that when we started to farm and we started to develop civilizations and cities and we start to live in close quarters, that's really when, number one, stress began, a lot of psychological stresses began. That's when we started to have immune problems, and that's when we really started to get, the beginnings of the degenerative disease crisis that we're experiencing today, 10, 12,000 years later, really got going. It's kind of an interesting hypothesis.
In the early days, shamans, for example, would use all kinds of herbs and plants, again, to solve problems. How in the heck did they know that a certain herb or a certain plant could fix some affliction?
That's a great question. You know, monkeys that live in trees can actually tell the difference between hundreds of different plants and hundreds of different berries and fruits as to which ones are good and which ones aren't. How does this wisdom get accessed? There seems to be some kind of, you know, Carl Jung talked about this. There seems to be some kind of universal field of intelligence that and information that somehow people and even animals can have the ability to tap into. And that is one of the great mysteries that I'm not sure we'll ever be able to answer. But how is it that we can have access to this kind to specialized information without necessarily having all the basic tools? The Chinese knew about acupuncture. You know, the Chinese knew that you could stick little needles in parts of the body and pain would go away.
Yeah, at certain points. They knew that.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
How did they know about meditation? How did they know about herbs? How did they know about the mind? You know, there's a book called the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali that was written some 3,500 years ago where they talk about specific sections of thinking and of the mind and of the brain that we didn't know about until 2,000, 3,000 years later.
You ever see a dog sometimes and it doesn't feel well? It'll go outside and it'll munch on grass or something.
Right.
It knows what to do.
Or mud or fecal material. Somehow they know that they need certain nutrients in different substances. You know, there's an inherent wisdom that we think we devalue because we think it has to be intelligence has to be something like numbers and writing and language. But there seems to be an intelligence that transcends all of the standard ways that we mark intellectual abilities or intelligent abilities. You know, octopuses can be trained to do things. Bees can be trained to be to do things. Even slime molds can be somehow trained to do things. How do these entities that don't have necessarily the neurology or the central nervous system that's required for thought, how can they learn? How can jellyfish learn?
I just had a story before you came on where 25% of a person's body that, according to a study, has the potential of coming down with skin cancer. I mean, that's astronomical, Ben.
Well, you know, the skin is a huge, huge organ, George. And even though the sun gets blamed for skin cancer, cancer is actually a very interesting subject. Cancer only occurs when a cell is under duress and has been under duress for a long period of time. And what happens with a cancer cell is it becomes like a sociopath. It doesn't listen to its neighbors. A cancer cell is a cell that only cares about itself. It's almost metaphorical in a sense. And a cell will only turn cancerous when it becomes completely stressed out, at its wit's end, if you will, in terms of toxicity, which, by the way, sugar counts as a toxin, in terms of acidity, in terms of an inability to utilize or access energy correctly, suffocation, lack of oxygen. A cell that turns cancerous under when it's under duress. And then you have a trigger like the sun, boom, that sets the whole thing off.
Well, what's the difference, Ben, between a benign tumor and a cancerous tumor? A tumor's a tumor.
Yeah, that's.
Or as Arnold would say, it's not a tumor.
Well, no, you're exactly right. A tumor is a sign of a cell that is somehow growing out of control. It's not doing its business. We take for granted some of the simplest things that the body does and that cells do. Just knowing how to grow and how to divide, that is one of the greatest miracles in all of life. Is how does a cell know how to divide? How does it know how to grow? And how does it know how to stop growing? And how does it know how to stop dividing? So a cancer cell, a tumor cell, whether it's benign or whether it's malignant, is somehow a cell that has lost the ability to regulate its growth. It's growing out of control. And that's really the crux of the matter. And if we want to eliminate a cancer, whether it's benign or malignant, we got to figure out what is getting into the cell or what is not getting into the cell is creating this duress, this stressful situation that is affecting how it's growing and how it's dividing.
Everything you've looked at as a pharmacist in your career, you've seen things change. Are medicines getting any better?
No, they're not. They're getting more specific, but they're not getting better. They're getting more fine-tuned. They're able to affect different processes inside the body. But, George, it comes right down to this. Chronic degenerative disease, which is 80% of the diseases that we suffer from, osteoporosis and arthritis and autoimmune diseases and cancer and diabetes. They come down to lifestyle issues. This is so important, George. We've medicalized everything. We've made our lives a consequence of the medical model, whether it has to do with putting your seatbelts on or the kinds of medicines that we take or the kind of diagnostics that we do and the kind of rituals that we have, like going to the doctor's office. And we've made our lives so medical. We have to take a step back. Have we gotten better with all the medicalization that's occurred over the last 150, 200 years? No. We've gotten sicker. You ask, have drugs gotten better? No. The failure rate of drugs today is just as bad as the failure rate of drugs 150 years ago when the pharmaceutical industry began. But it doesn't matter, because between oxygenation, detoxification, blood sugar control, taking care of your digestive system, that includes the gut bacteria, every single chronic degenerative disease can be reversed. Every single one, George. This is the cause of chronic degenerative disease. The best the medical model or the pharmacomedical model can do is mask the symptoms. The best the model can do is meet metric standards, that is, meet number standards that are, by the way, set by the drug companies that are selling the drugs. But as far as actual reversal of symptomology, the only thing that works, and this is the best news of all, the only thing that works are things that we can do from the comfort of our own living room. We can maintain our money, we can maintain our time, we can maintain our dignity and free ourselves from the medical model from the comfort of our own couch by practicing deep breathing techniques, by eating more protein and fat and getting micronutrients, by stabilizing the digestive system, and that means the gut bacteria primarily, by caloric restriction, by activating the healing nervous system called the parasympathetic nervous system through massage and hot water and Reiki and meditation and deep breathing techniques, none of which involve the medical model, none of which have any toxicity or side effects, all of which are things that we can do ourselves.
What do you think of a little hot water and lemon? I hear it's pretty good for you.
It's really good for you. That's exactly what I'm talking about, and you can tell by sipping on it. Did you ever have a sore throat and sip on hot water and lemon? Oh, my God. And you know what else, George? Something as simple as lemon water can be a powerful way to get you into caloric restriction, which is not only important for mental health and for chronic degenerative disease, but it's a great way to lose weight, because lemon contains electrical substances that will disperse in the water, and if you can stir that water up with a little bit of lemon juice in there, you can activate the electrolytes, you can activate those electrical nutrients, and get a big hit of energy and nutrition divorced from calories. And if you're trying to lose weight or you're trying to get better, if you have a chronic degenerative disease, you can improve those markers as well.
Adverse effects in drugs kinds of scares me, because on one, they want you to take the drugs for some illness, but then they tell you about all these adverse effects.
Have you noticed that the commercials now have to be 90 seconds long? The drug commercials,
yeah,
have to be 90 seconds, right? Usually commercial 60 seconds. No, they have to add an extra 30 seconds. Why? Because they have
the disclaimers.
Exactly.
They say so fast, you can't even hear them and understand them.
Exactly. You know, I'm not sure if I told the story before, but in pharmacy school, we had to watch a movie. It was an hour-long movie about a drug that was going to revolutionize the hypertensive business, a drug called Inderal, or now known as propranolol, and it was the first of the beta blocker drugs, a particularly nasty set of drugs that poisons the heart, literally poisons cardiac tissue to slow it down. And the first, this was the pharmacomedical strategy for lowering blood pressure. And so it was an hour-long movie, the first 20 minutes or so was about how wonderful this drug was, and the last 40 minutes of the movie was Tom Lee. I'm not kidding you.
The disclaimer. Ben, we're going to take some calls with you when we come back. Ben's website, criticalhealthnews.com, toll-free number if you want to talk to them, 855-949-7234.